This land is yours. This land is mine. From California to New York, from the redwood forest to Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhan of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday and Wednesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our site at www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to our past shows in our iPod Ready archive section. That's www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. You can also listen to us live via satellite on your Nokia phone. Just go to the website for details. I want to take a minute to send gentle thoughts and gratitude for the safety of the BBS Broadcasting and all of our friends there. Our broadcasting network, BBS Broadcasting, is in Paradise, California, and was burned down last week during the fires still raging in California. I believe it was around 400 acres that have gone up in flames. Thankfully, no one at the station was hurt. And for all the people still in danger in California, we continue to send our thoughts. The people of the People Speak Radio are glad you're all okay and that we can continue broadcasting through the BBS radio station. Thank you. In a world that seems to be filled with chaos these days, there are people that have discovered techniques for quietness and how to enter into a world of serenity, a place where one can focus. Unity in a world that seems to have gone insane. Max Simon is one of these people. Our guest tonight is no novice to the world of meditation or the healing arts. He is the son of David Simon, the co-founder of the Chopra Center for Ayurvedic Healing in La Jolla, California. Welcome, Max, to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm glad, proud to be here.
How's your father doing? I worked with David in Seduction of Spirit for a week meditation out in California, and he was just amazing.
Cool. When was that?
Gosh, it's got to be about 8 or 9 years right now that we.
Well, it sounds
that
like
we
you're in for a tune-up then.
Really, I definitely am in for a major overhaul. I'll tell you that much. I know your dad probably won't remember me out of the thousands of people they meet in the workshops they do at the Chopra Center, but I'll never forget him. He's an incredible speaker, and if you're half as skilled as he is, I'm sure you're making an impact on the world that is truly profound.
I learned so much from watching them. In fact, I kind of grew up watching my father and Deepak on stage, so for a little while there, when I was working for the Chopra Center, I almost felt like I was my father's mini clone. But what happened, actually, it's an interesting part of my own story, is that I was touring the country and I was teaching meditation and yoga and Ayurveda. And, you know, at age of 22, I was in front of 500, 600, 700 people at a time. And while there was one part of me that totally loved that experience and just was having the time of my life, there was another part of me that, just like I mentioned, I had become very inauthentic with who I was and how I was showing up. And ultimately, it was that recognition that I wasn't really living my own truth that caused me to step away from my family, really, and start this new movement that I've been heading up for the last 9 months or so, called the Self-Centered Tour.
You know, I was reading a lot of the information and going through the website, and I really love the new approach that you have. You know, we live in a world, Max, that's almost at the, that travels at the speed of light. How do you get people to self-center themselves with this tour?
Yeah, well, if you're talking philosophically, the way that we get them to get centered in themselves is to bring the language, the knowledge, the wisdom to them in a fresh package that makes it identifiable and relatable. You know, one of the things that I realized is that a lot of the people who are in the world of spirituality have for very solid reasons, crafted this image that seems almost unattainable to a lot of people. It seems too difficult to get your arms around because it's so far outside of an individual's current state of being. And I just realized, especially because I'm a young guy and I haven't been in it as long as some of my teachers, that it didn't need to be that. And if it was going to be brought to the mainstream, to the larger geographic parts of the world, that it's okay for it to be kind of made a little simpler and more digestible and not quite as outside of the realm of somebody's current belief system. So that's why I appreciate you saying that it's got a new, fresh packaging, because we've really spent the time to take some of these traditional methodologies and retranslate them so that they're just very, very easy to integrate into today's modern, fast-paced world.
Well, I'll tell you, I did find it fascinating. As a Reiki master and a teacher of meditative practice myself, I was indoctrinated into the healing arts through a lovely and spiritual form of tradition, very highly traditional. And at the very least, they were glorious, and at the very best, they were profound. However, some of my deepest healing came through a group of friends of mine that sat around on Wednesday nights for years, and we reikied each other to the tune of laughter, chatter, and healing. And for me, those moments really rang out in my experience. You know, you're right. People have this misconception. What are some of the major misconceptions that you run into about meditative practice?
Well, I could talk.
I'm sure there's a lot of them.
I could talk for the next couple hours about all the funny excuses people make as to why they can't meditate. And in fact, I even did a little blurb on my website called Meditation Misconceptions, because there are so many out there. I mean, they range from the belief that it's a religious practice, all the way to the simple misconception that I can't do it, or I could never sit still, or I couldn't get my mind to quiet down, or, you know, there's a traditional misconception that all meditators are tree huggers, or that, you know, people, if you meditate, you're going to have your head in the clouds all the time. And there's so many. But, I mean, one of the things that I believe, realize, and actually am very much about teaching this these days is that anytime somebody is afraid of something, which is really what you're saying is a misconception, is because it's unknown. And the moment that you bring it to them in a way that makes it known and doesn't stretch them too far outside of their current belief system, then all of a sudden the fear and the misconception dissipates. And with that, it's a lot easier for people to take the first step, you know, because that barrier that's causing them to stay at a distance is now totally dissolved.
Well, I know for myself, I often found that one of the greatest, I don't know if it's necessarily a misconception, but a misunderstanding of why people meditate. A lot of people feel that it's a useless waste of time. As a matter of fact, we do have a question here that I was holding off for a few minutes to start our questions, but they seem to be pouring in from our guests. A text question from Mike in California, and he asks, how does yoga and meditation help with global warming or the present tragedy in Iraq? Now, that's one of the questions that a lot of people are asking. How does meditation fit into that kind of, to a world of chaos?
Yeah, I have a very clear answer for that. Meditation shouldn't be looked at allopathically, meaning meditation is not what's going to cure world hunger or war or disease. But what it will do is create a certain sense of connection and appreciation and love in each individual that uses it. And with that, then, it might be somebody's own individual interest with that new state of consciousness to want to get involved or to make different choices. But ultimately, one of the things that I've been taught is that everything that happens in the external world is simply a reflection of the internal world. So if inside of yourself you're feeling stressed or you're feeling scared or you're feeling nervous, then you're going to make choices that reflect that energy, in which case sometimes that means, well, if I'm feeling nervous about my state of being and because money's tight, and since money's tight, you know, buying organic food seems too much like a stretch to me, so I'm just going to continue to, you know, go to the local supermarket, and then you rationalize it. Well, it's, you know, I can't afford it because I'm in this delicate space, and so then the world continues to unfold in this unhealthy pattern. But if you shift into a, as I like to say, a self-centered space, then the fear that you have about being in the world dissolves. The uncertainty becomes okay, and that sense of connection and stability and clarity becomes the predominant state of being. All of a sudden, all of your choices reflect that, and with that individual shift in somebody's being, we create a collective shift in for the problems of the world.
Well, I'll tell you, we have these questions coming in, so I'm just going to just go for it. John from the Canadian Rockies' question is it fair to say that meditation is the antithesis of internet chat? I like that one. I had to bring that in. you know, Max, I'll tell you, this is a very pertinent question. A lot of people are, you know, this new technology has, there isn't anybody that isn't connected anymore, but what are we connected to? Are we connected to internet chat, or are we connected to the universe and the world that exists around us? I think this is a really, really interesting mirror of what's really happening in the world of the internet and cyberspace.
Well, my personal feelings are that it's okay to be connected to the internet, and it's okay to be connected to yourself simultaneously. I mean, I come from a younger generation and am really becoming one of the international authorities in teaching young people consciousness. And one of the things that young people hate is being told what they can't do or what they shouldn't be doing or being judged of what they are doing. And what that does is it almost fuels this rebellious nature to keep doing it. Because, you know, when you're young, you just want to feel like you can do anything. And when somebody tells you you can't do it, all you want to do is do it more. And so one of our values in the self-centered tour is to enjoy the seductiveness of the world with healthy discretion. And the way that you do that is through using the tools that, as I stated before, help you tap into a space that is clear about the choices you're making. Chatting on the online isn't the destructive thing. It's becoming so attached to it that you lose a sense of social connection, or becoming so engaged in it that you're in front of your computer for 6 hours, that's the destructive part. So if you're plugged into how you're feeling and you're observing your actions and you're really present with the experience, you can't do it for that long. It's just like anything. You'll get tired of it, and your body will tell you to move along, and then you move along effortlessly and naturally. So I don't think it's internet or the technology or anything else that is causing the challenges of the world. I think it's the place that people are coming from that's causing the challenges in the world. And so if we shift where people are coming from into a more calm, cool, connected space, then everything reflects that same paradigm, and nothing has to be that big of a deal.
And for those of you that think that Max is not into the internet, you can go to www.getselfcentered.com. and see some of the innovative methodologies that they're using in his program. I think it's really worth, especially for anybody that has worked within traditional modalities of meditation. I think something like this is really fresh. It's clean. It addresses what is happening in the real world. Not what is happening in a spiritual world, what is happening in the today real world. So that's www.getselfcentered.com. We've got some more questions here, but I would like to touch briefly on something that you said. It was kind of involved in a question that I had. You know, a lot of people would have rebelled, and obviously you did, but at your later years, when you were actually working at the Chopra Center, Max, how did that kind of life develop in your own family as you were younger? Were you rebelling against it? Were you excited about it? Was there a time when you knew that this was something that you needed to do?
So it's funny that you asked that question, because Whole Life Times, a magazine here in L.A., just did an article called Growing Up God, and they highlighted a couple different children who grew up in kind of famous spiritual households. And it was pretty funny because they asked, you know, I was one of those people that they highlighted, and they asked me to send in a picture. And so I was, when the article came out, there was these other children with these kind of very sweet, you know, spiritual-like pictures in it. And I sent in a picture of when I was 6 years old and Halloween, and I was dressed up as a devil. And it's because I, once again, and I really appreciate you saying that it's real, that what I'm doing has a kind of an authenticity to it, is that I'm not in any way, shape, or form claiming that I am this perfect, almighty human being. I actually want nothing less than to be considered a guru. And when I was growing up, I had plenty of problems. You know, yeah, my mom meditates still to this day 4 to 5 hours every single day. And this was before meditation was even the least bit accepted. So you can imagine that when my friends came over and they saw the meditation room, you know, the type of the teasing I would get from all that. And so when I kind of hit puberty, which is really when it all came crashing down for me, I went on off the deep end, and I did drugs, and I partied, and I made bad choices, and I did a lot of stuff that is very normal to any adolescent who is growing up. And actually, my story goes is that when I was in college, after I had had a long night of partying, I was a DJ and, you know, just being total normal, I don't know if we should call it normal, a total typical, you know, American college kid, I woke up and said, oh, I am wasting away my potential, and it's time for me to move on. And so I called up my dad, and I said, Dad, I need some help. And he said, well, pretty easy for you to get the help you need. Just go back to your roots and start meditating again. And so that was, you know, I think I was 20 years old and started meditating, and just immediately felt like I had found myself again. It was like coming back to this really clear, comfortable, authentic space. And that took me to volunteering at the Chopra Center, to working at the Chopra Center, to, at the age of 22, becoming the youngest yoga, meditation, and Ayurveda teacher in the Chopra Center's history. And from there, you know, I kind of, the rest is history. So I was no different than a lot of people. You know, I had this spiritual household, and I was surrounded by these practices, and I was, you know, Deepak is like Uncle Deepak to me, and had that. And simultaneously, because of my own path and my own story, I left for a while. And that also was very, very youthful in my own evolution.
Fascinating. You know, Max, there are a couple of questions here that I'm going to bring about, because you did mention something that a lot of the 60s generation, we have Doc in California. Let me, I think these will be self-explanatory. Doc in Oklahoma, I'm sorry. And Eileen in Wisconsin, both are asking similar questions. Doc's question is the use of marijuana beneficial in the practice of meditation? And Eileen in Wisconsin asks, do you think that incense or even mind-expanding drugs can assist in meditation or spiritual development? Obviously, having probably tested the waters, as you have said, you may have some insight on this.
I don't think that there is any right answer to those questions. And what I mean by that is, for some people, based upon the place they are in their own evolution and where they are in the world and what practices and styles they have, I think all of it's useful. I think for some people who maybe come from a history of addiction or have some darkness surrounding some of these mind-expanding substances, that they shouldn't be used. I think that it's dependent on the individual, and they can be expansive and beautiful, and they can be constrictive and dark. And it's not fair, I think, in any part to say yes or no to those things, because like everybody in the planet, everybody's coming in with their own individual story. And, you know, the best answer I could give is sit down, close your eyes, and get quiet, and ask yourself the question, is this something that will be expansive, or is this something that will be destructive? And listen to that wisdom from a deeper, more expanded place of awareness. And then follow your heart. And I'm not here to judge anybody. Like I said, my goal is to enjoy the seductiveness of the world's healthy discretion. And that's, you know, different for every person.
You call your practitioners awareness architects. I love that. Again, another fresh look at, but what is the obviously, what kind of architects are you using? What are the building blocks that you use within the modality that you work with?
Yeah, great. We have, since we launched this program, we've been on this really interesting ride of determining what's the best structure, what's the best package that really allows people to get involved. And for some people, getting involved means just learning the tools. For some people, getting involved means really going through the process and integrating this lifestyle, this wisdom, this energy into their life. And for some people, the ones that I really, really acknowledge, they are the ones that want to take this knowledge, go through the process, and then go back into their world and truly make a difference. Because if you ask me, teaching the world to meditate is the most significant thing we could do for the world. So our awareness architects, and we've just restructured the program to make it effective, because that's really what's the need, is to make sure that even as people go through the training, that it's also effective. Where if you go through this series of processes, which is a one-day event to a three-day event, and there's a four-day part one awareness architects training and a four-day part two awareness architects training. Once you go through those processes, you are now qualified and certified and ready to teach the self-centered tools. So what are the self-centered tools? Well, we teach a number of different meditation techniques, of which one is a certain type of breath awareness technique. One is a sonic sound technique, or in some traditional forms known as a mantra technique. And then we teach some more advanced styles of attention and intention and sensational observation and a number of different practices that all have value in different ways. We teach self-centered breath styles, which are different kind of technologies to either quiet down the mind and tap into a still space, or to invigorate and inspire and enliven the body's natural energy. So we teach some breath styles, as well as we have some signature experiences. And our signature experiences are kind of clearly the most well-received right now in terms of just creating some buzz. So one of those things that we do is called a PDM, which is a public display of meditation. And what that is a technique to find stillness, find peace, find a sense of calm in the midst of total chaos outdoors in busy areas. And it's not just sitting down to meditate on the street. We put people through a whole process of really making sure they get the full value out of each stage along the way. So that one's, you know, another thing that we teach. We also have a chocolate meditation, which is about finding...
I think a lot of people would like that.
Oh, it's such a crowd pleaser. It's about finding really the connection to the moment through engaging the senses and through experiencing how indulgent that can be. We even have a chocolate sponsor, Theo Chocolates. They have this delicious organic fair trade chocolate they provide for us. And then we have some other kind of signature meditation experiences, some things called a voice jam meditation, which is about vocal expression. And we have a don't stop dance meditation, and we have a shaking meditation, and we have all these different techniques, and all with the intention of showing people that as you use these tools and these technologies with awareness, they have tremendous value in all different areas of your life. And since I have grown up kind of experiencing all the different kinds, I decided not to limit it to one, to say this is the way it's done. I think in today's day and age, people really appreciate choice. So we offer a plethora of different tools. And in the trainings, our awareness architects then are taught how to facilitate those in these very specific and effective ways.
Well, they sound amazing. And I know that for people listening, you know, that have the typical traditional images of the meditated guru under the tree, you know, these kind of, you know, probably listening thinking, well, how can it be meditative? How can a shaking meditation? It would be no different than dancing or the music or the labyrinth walking meditations or any of the historic meditations. It's just a new twist. I think they're just wonderful. I really think that this is just an incredible thing that you tapped into, Max. We have a
Just to quickly share this too. If you go to our site, you know, which is getselfcentered.com, in the bottom right corner, there's a little YouTube icon. If people click on that, they can see a video from one of our last public displays of meditation in Hollywood, which we filmed, and it was right in front of the Chinese Theater in Hollywood. And as soon as we sat down, a Snoopy impersonator and a Johnny Depp impersonator sat down with us.
How do you get to that?
So if you go to our site, on the very bottom right corner of our site, on every page of our site, there's a little YouTube icon. That YouTube icon then takes you to our specific, you know, it's our Get Self-Centered YouTube account. And you can see...
Well, that sounds wonderful. I'm certainly going to look at that myself. We have a question, and this is probably an age-old question, and I'm sure you get it, from Debbie from Massachusetts. And she says, meditation never works for me. I'm too stressed. How do people like me get meditation to work for us?
I want to start by saying how cool it is that you have these listeners calling in, writing in from all over the world. It's really great.
It is. It's amazing.
We're really fortunate.
We're fortunate to have our great listeners with us. And thank you all for calling in. And we really appreciate it, too.
Yeah, it's really great. I mean, usually when I get that question, which you're right, I do get quite a bit, I ask questions back, like, did you know how to spell the first time you started spelling? Or did you know how to drive the first time you started driving? Or did you know how to ride a bike the first time you started riding a bike? And, of course, the answer to all of those questions is no, because it takes guidance, it takes practice, and it takes training. And the thing that's so funny about meditation is that you think, you believe that sitting down to close your eyes should be easy because you're not doing anything. But in fact, the process of quieting the mind is one of the most challenging things that those who are not accustomed to doing it have to do. So my response is always, you just need to get the training. I am yet to have somebody come to one of our trainings and not leave feeling masterful with the meditation techniques. And that's all it is. You get the training and you have a deep experience and everything shifts. So, you know, you can't necessarily read something out of a book and just get it. Like if I was to tell you to go learn to swim by reading a book, you wouldn't expect your child to go hop in the ocean. So meditation is no different. It just so happens that when we look at the images of, you know, and even the words of what people have been saying for so long, it seems like it should be so easy. It's just that it takes some training, and there's some really great kind of tricks that you can use that really help you get into a nice quiet space. And so you have to know that it's possible, and you have to trust that if you're going to go into the training, somebody's going to guide you to the space that you want to go. So that's ultimately why we've created what we've done, is by hopefully taking it into a much more cutting-edge paradigm. It'll give people a sense of trust of not only these guys know where I'm coming from, but they seem like they're pretty self-centered themselves.
You know, one of the things that I always found that helped me in the beginning when I used to struggle with meditation many, many years ago, and then I heard something, and it brought me a great sense of peace. And I don't even remember now who said it at the time, and they said to me, there is no wrong way to meditate. And surely there was never a wrong way to meditate, and there has never been, even in as brief a time as 2 and 3 minutes in my life, that I have sat and quieted and centered my mind and centered me with everything, that I have not walked away with great benefit from it, not once. So for those of you that have that don't meditate, there are very few words that can describe the experience. You don't even really know. In the beginning, you almost sense that, do you, Max?
Yeah, there's a funny thing. And first, your story is beautiful. And it's true. You know, it's one of the teaching points that gives people a sense of comfort, is there's not a wrong way to meditate. And in fact, you know, one of the other things that we talk about and go into quite a depth around is that there's only three experiences you can have during meditation. That's it. You can fall asleep, which probably just means that you're tired. You know, people want to read into things pretty deeply usually.
And I've often done that.
Yeah, everybody has. I would be lying if I didn't say I do too, you know. So you can fall asleep, you can think a lot, and any thought that you have is still just a thought, whether it's a auditory thought, a visual thought, a dream, a distraction, it's all just a thought. So that's fine, you're thinking. The thought that you're having too many thoughts is one of the most significant and profound thoughts you've ever had. Because until you had that thought that you're not your thoughts, you thought that you were your thoughts. So, great. You acknowledge that you're thinking, and the fact that you even recognize that your mind is thinking, but that there's a place inside of you that's not thinking, wow, what an amazing awareness point. What a great experience to have, right? Or you get to that space, and you have the right tools, and the setting is right, to where you transcend thought. You go into a quiet, comfortable, connected place where there is no activity. There's just pure connection. And that's beautiful, and that's, you know, where you start to have that experience regularly, and you bring that out with you, and then that becomes your state of being, where you feel calm, clear, and connected all the time. And that's why you meditate. It's not so that you can spend some time with your eyes closed. It's so that when you open your eyes, that sense of self-centeredness stays with you throughout the day.
We've got a number of questions from our guests still, from our listeners. I did want to say one thing. As many years as I have been meditating, it never ceases to amaze me that once I have come out of meditation and I open my eyes, everything in the world is brighter and clearer. And I mean that tangibly. I mean, the vision that I have when I come out of a meditative state is so crisp, so clear, so bright. To this day, it never ceases to astound me. I guess because I do wear glasses, and I, for many years as a child, I struggled with not being able to see, and then we finally got glasses. And there's something connected to that bright vision. I think you know what I'm talking about, Max, when you just open your eyes and suddenly everything's just like so sharp and so fresh and so clean and clear.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I just
To this day, every single time I get out of a meditation, I don't care if I meditate 15 times a day, it's the same experience every time, and it never is so profound. We have a question from Kathy from British Columbia. And for those of you that have not forgotten, you can also call us on our toll-free numbers. Let me get those right here. I'm sorry, pulled up my screen a little bit. 877-489-6350. And toll-free from U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494. Those numbers again, 877-489-6350 and 888-228-4494. And you can speak to Max Simon, who is the creator of an innovative form of meditation that I think is just, you know, spectacular. Self-centered. The self-centered tour. Frank from Louisiana asked, do you teach breathing techniques as part of the yoga or meditative training?
Yeah, definitely. Breath is one of the most powerful vehicles to facilitate connection. And not only do we teach breathing techniques, but we really bring it into a very experiential realm of our trainings and do some pretty deep and challenging and life-changing processes with breath. So, absolutely.
Mm. This is an interesting question, and this, I think it's important because of the area that it touches in. Eric in Brooklyn asks, how would your particular school of meditation help in the practice of religions like witchcraft? Now, I think he means Wicca, but,
I'm gonna just make a blanket statement here. I think meditation affects everything in a positive way. And the reason why, it goes back to what I was saying in the beginning, is that once you really quiet down all the mind chatter, once your body starts to feel healthy and relaxed and not tense, and once you feel a sense of connection to your truth, to your authenticity, then anything that you do is quite a bit more focused, and it's quite a bit more clear, and it has this very beautiful level of authenticity in its expression. So if you want to be the most prolific Wiccan speaker on the planet, you know, I think meditation is one of the vehicles to help you really tap into that energy. Or if you want to be the most loving parent, this is such a great way to make you a better listener and more present with your children. Or if you want to be the most cutting-edge athlete, this is a way to get you so calm and clear and connected so that when you go into the battlefield or you go in to compete, you are performing from a more advanced level, and you're tapping into that flow, which allows you to be more spontaneously creative and more spontaneously evolved in your action. I just feel like this technology, and that's really what it is, this technology is one of the most useful things we could offer the planet. And that's ultimately why my mission is to get millions of people to learn these tools and to start using them, because we talk so much about, you know, environmental sustainability or becoming green. It's like really great, actually, that it's becoming this new keyword. But the problem is that we've stopped focusing on human sustainability. And not stopped, I should say. It's become a secondary thing. And I think if we were to shift that mindset, if we were to focus all of our energies on making sure that each individual on the planet was sustainable in their own energy, meaning utilizing their unique talents and special skills, not feeling stressed out, really being present with the planet, then all of the issues that we're facing, from war to ecological damage to poverty, it would kind of naturally correct itself because it would be a reflection of the collective. So meditation, in my personal perspective, is one of the most significant solutions. It's definitely not the only one. Right? I'm not claiming for any sense this is the problem to solve the world, or the solution to solve the problems of the world. But I do think that it can be brought into every single area of the problems of the world, and you'll notice an impact.
Well, I absolutely know for a fact that not only will it bring a different light onto the problems of the world, but it helps empower people to have the tools, or to even see what the tools are that are available to us. And I think a lot of times in the jumble clutter that goes on in our minds, we don't see what's right before us in our toolbox. Kathy from British Columbia, least I forget Kathy, I would never forget you, Kathy, asks the question, would you compare and contrast a state of meditation and that of a dream state?
Yes, and actually before I do, I just wanted to add one last piece to that last statement you made. And Marianne Williamson, who I love and adore and is kind of a good family friend, one of the things that she said is, and I think it's so spot on, is you can't solve the problems of the world from the same state of consciousness that created them.
Amazing, yeah.
And I feel like that, you know, that right there is kind of the conversation around what do these tools do to impact the rest of the planet, is elevate the state of consciousness, the state of awareness, and the problems that created them will no longer be in existence.
Absolutely.
So that being said, traditionally, if you look at the states of consciousness as they relate to kind of some of the traditional texts, you know, there's sleeping state, there's dreaming state, and then there's waking state. And those are the primary three states of consciousness in which people exist. Sleep, there is very little level of awareness. You know, I can go up to you and I can say something to you, and you might kind of register what I'm saying, but it's not really there. A dream state is a more active level of consciousness, but in the same sense, there still isn't very much awareness there. And when we say awareness, it's the ability to have clarity. So if there's, you know, if something's happening in the room and you're dreaming, you'll still be pretty connected to the dream without much awareness about what else is going on around you, which means that it's still a pretty low level of consciousness because it's only focused on one particular thing in this state, you know, in this case, what's happening in your mind. Meditation is restful awareness. So even though your eyes are closed, even though you're still, even though aesthetically it might look like you could be dreaming, you are completely aware of not only what's happening inside of you, but what's happening outside of you as well. And when you bring that level of awareness into the conversation of rest or of creativity, it magnifies the ability to have it be effective. So studies have proven that meditation is a deeper level of rest and rejuvenation than sleep. Why would we say that? Well, from my standpoint, it's because it's restful awareness, not restful dullness. With the awareness, it magnifies the intention. When you're tapping into that quiet space, you're moving beyond the constraints of the mind. And the mind, which typically is stuck in its conditioned ways of thinking, behaving, thinks the same thing over and over again. Once you move beyond that, you tap into a creative space, which then allows for new ideas, new thoughts, new concepts to come up. You know, is that happening because of your mind or because of that quiet space? I think it's the mixing of those two which is creating this kind of creative dynamic. So the difference between dreaming, which is kind of a restful dullness state where you're not necessarily aware of what's being created in meditation, is that you are really able to take a hold of your vision, take a hold of your energy, take a hold of your environment, and consciously shape it in a way that serves you versus a dream, which is just kind of happening.
That's an excellent, excellent description of the differences, I believe. We've got a couple more questions, and I'm hoping to be able to get all of our listeners' questions in before we close out for the evening, Max. Alice in Texas, have you heard of the meditation yoga teacher Richard Heidelman, and what did you think of his training? Yeah, it's either Heidelman or Hittleman.
Unfortunately, I haven't heard of him, so I can't comment.
I don't recall the name either, I'm afraid. That's Alice in Texas. I'm sorry, Alice. Neither one of us recalls the name, but thank you for the question. Carol in Missouri asks, how important are diet and supplements in your life, Max?
In my personal life? I mean, obviously anything that happens in your existence is important. And what I mean by that is that the way that I look at the world is that the environment is just an extension of my own personal body. What I see, what I smell, what I taste, what I touch, and what I hear, all is being assimilated into my own individuality. Which means that if you look at, you know, how we ingest the planet, we need to be very conscious of those choices we make. So I follow a primarily vegetarian diet, but I'm not rigid against anything or rigid to anything because, quite frankly, I believe that our desire to define ourselves by anything also is limiting. So it's like if you say you're a vegetarian and you are not a meat eater, you're not all these things, and it creates these boundaries that I just don't feel like I want to play in anymore.
Exactly.
So
I'm a vegetarian and nothing else.
Yeah, it's like it just seems like it's unnecessary to me. I mean, I found throughout my teachings that people waste a lot of energy on doing things that they want to be good. You know, it's meaning like it might be something that's good for you, but they spent so much of their own energy defending it and arguing it and being attached to it that it has a counterproductive effect. And I want everything I do to have a smoothness to it, to have a level of fluidity so that I don't have to get stuck in anything.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah, so I eat, you know, I eat healthy. Well, once again, when you're tapped in, you just know, like, you know, today, I just moved to L.A. a little while ago, which has been an interesting journey. And in L.A., they've got these things called pinkberry. So pinkberry is basically sugar-filled frozen yogurt with good marketing that makes people think it's actually not really that, you know, bad for you. But it's like pure sugar in frozen yogurt, and I love it. So they put fruit in it, which makes me feel a little bit like I'm doing something that's not so bad for myself. But I don't mind eating that as long as I'm not doing it three times a day. You know, it's like I'm enjoying the seductiveness of the world with healthy discretion. I'm feeling my body. And if my body starts to feel like, ooh, you know, you're not making the best choices right now, then I make some adjustments and I go back to a more pure diet. And then with vitamins, I actually drink this product that the Chopra Center helped create called Zuri, which is an Ayurvedic liquid nutritional drink made from amla. So I have a couple shots of that every day. I take some of Chopra Center's men's vitality formula, which is just a basic multivitamin with a couple Ayurvedic herbs. But even those, you know, I'm not rigidly attached to them. I have days and sometimes even weeks where I don't take them, and that's just part of it, and it's okay. You know, if you feel yourself falling off and you notice that it's making an impact, then go back to it, or maybe not, you know. The only thing I do every single day without fail is meditation, and I'll do some stretching.
All things in moderation. How wonderful. Now, my question real quick, when will you next be in Michigan?
When will I be in Michigan?
Yes, that's where I'm out of. I would love to.
Well, here sounds like we're winding down. I'll leave you and the listeners with what my vision is, in hopes of inspiring people to kind of maybe support me and us in continuing this whole movement. First is that I write a newsletter every week called The Vibe. And every week it's just different kind of thoughts that are flowing through my mind about different elements of either my life or people's lives or whatever. And then once a month I do a full-blown newsletter, which is just full of really helpful content. And it keeps you posted on what's going on in our world. So I would love to have you and everybody who's listening, sign up for that newsletter. It's called The Vibe. So if you go to our site, that will really keep you connected to me, to our movement, and to what's going on. Besides that, you know, we do have trainings that we're doing here, mostly in LA right now. But I am so willing and ready to either personally go or to send my awareness architects to places in the country that are hungry for us. And so if somebody wants to set up an event and fly me or somebody out there, let's have that conversation. And you can go to our site and figure out how to connect with us and to contact us to get that stuff set up, because we're ready. We have the education and the knowledge. We have the team of people, and we certainly have the right energy to do it. So we're just looking for opportunity right now, and anybody that's interested in it, we absolutely will work with you on making it a reality.
Well, that's wonderful. And Max's site, for those of you, again, before we wrap it up, www.getselfcentered.com. You can go there. I have already signed up for the magazine, the newsletter every month. And I want to thank you, Max. You are an extraordinary young man, a gentleman that your father should be really proud of. And good luck in your work. The world needs a fresh approach to an old way of life. Thank you very much for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to have tomorrow night on the People Speak Radio, Deborah Sweet, the National Director of the World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime, with our host David Swanson. And we will also be having a special show this Thursday, the 19th, and my guest will be Ramsey Clark, former Attorney General of the United States. And we will be discussing impeachment. Thank you very much, Max, for being with us. It has been a pleasure. Namaste, my friend.
Much love. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, folks, it's a wrap. Bye-bye.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the city wall, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering, if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.